Sigame sono ma sattu se sepp ja oma önne valaja.
Ja, ja, ja!
Yks korpra fatta vim, mis kogunen salaja.
Ja, ja, ja!
Mäisahat põlevad, saksahat surevad, metsia maasavad meitele ja meitele ja meitele ja meitele, meitele, meitele ja meitele ja meitele ja meitele, meitele, meitele.
Tere, and welcome back to the History of Estonia podcast. On the historical identity of Estonians and the politics of memory in Estonia, with Thomas Hiio. In this episode, I had the honor of sitting in the same room with the guest when I recently traveled to Estonia and met with Thomas Hiio in his office at the Estonian War Museum in the Tallinn suburb of Viimsi. The size and grandeur of the museum added a backdrop to the interview that my home office lacks, and it was my first visit to the museum. I strongly recommend that you take the time to check it out if you haven't already done so. Thomas Hiio, born on June 1, 1965, is a distinguished Estonian historian known for his significant contributions to the study of Estonia's history during crucial periods. He completed his education at Tallinn 32nd Secondary School in 1983 and earned his degree in history from Tartu University in 1991. Hiio is a highly regarded in academic circles and holds the esteemed position as research director at the Leidener Museum. Additionally, he serves as the research manager at the Estonian Memory Institute, showcasing his expertise and dedication to preserving Estonia's historical legacy. Apart from his academic pursuits, he was also a respected reserve officer, having attained the rank of second lieutenant in 1998. Recognizing his contributions to historical research and Estonian society, he was awarded the Order of the White Cross, fourth class, in 2002. Thomas Hiio was the executive head of the Estonian International Commission for the Investigation of Crimes Against Humanity, or the EICICH, from 1999 to 2008. The EICICH was a joint Estonian-German commission established to investigate crimes against humanity committed during the Soviet occupation of Estonia. Hiio was responsible for coordinating the commission's work, which included collecting evidence, interviewing witnesses, and preparing reports. He also played a key role in raising awareness of the commission's work and findings. The EICICH's work was groundbreaking and helped to shed light on a dark chapter of Estonian history during the Soviet occupation. Hiio's role in the commission was essential to its success, and he is considered a leading expert on the history of Estonia during this period. Here are some of the specific things that Hiio did in his role as executive head of the EICICH. He led the development of the commission's methodology for investigating crimes against humanity. He oversaw the collection of evidence, including witness testimony, archival documents, and physical evidence. He prepared reports on the commission's findings, which were published in both Estonian and English. He gave presentations and public lectures about the commission's work. He worked to raise awareness of the commission's work and its findings among the Estonian public and international community. Hiio's work as executive head of the EICICH was essential to its success. He was a dedicated and committed researcher who helped ensure the commission's work was thorough and impartial. He was also a skilled communicator who could effectively communicate the commission's findings to the public. Hiio's work on the EICICH is a testament to his commitment to truth and justice. He played a vital role in documenting the crimes committed against the Estonian people during the Soviet occupation, and his work has helped to ensure that these crimes will never be forgotten.
Could you elaborate on Estonia's historical position as crossroads between German and Russian cultural spheres and how it influenced its national identity?
Yes, of course, but you could imagine it already coming from our geographical position. And you should remember that in 100 years ago, Germany has a border with modern Latvia in south of the Liepāja.
Yeah.
So now there is about I know how many, there's 1,500 kilometers from here to Berlin. But 100 years ago, this distance was about 400, 500 kilometers. So everything is always changing. And as you know, Estonian and Latvian lands were conquered by crusaders who came from German lands. It was no Germany then. There were many smaller, bigger German states and how they call it? Dutchdom.
Okay.
Duchies and counties and so on. Of course, there was also the Holy Roman Empire of a German nation, a Teutonic nation.
Right.
But anyway, the Germans came in the beginning of the 13th century and they stayed here as upper class or nobility and city burghers. And Estonians and Latvians were peasants. Mm-hmm. So it is now we are living in a democratic society, and by the theory, even the lowest part of society could influence the whole picture. But before 20th century, of course, everything was dictated by upper classes, and therefore we cannot deny that there was a strong German, we could say German, not thinking about Germany, because it was not Germany exactly, directly.
But German culture,
long influence of German culture, of course. Christianity was taken to Estonia by crusaders, and also Protestantism came from German towns, German cities to Estonia in the beginning of 16th century. Our literary language or written language was initially created by German priests, because in Lutheran church, everybody, principally everybody, has to can read. Mm-hmm. And therefore also language was needed, and the written language. But on the other hand, German influence was also negative, because upper class were German speaking, but they were never numerous enough to assimilate local population. So there was always during 600 years a big difference between German speaking upper class and Estonians being lower class in Estonia, and Latvians in Latvia, of course. So we could look it as one entity, Estonia and Latvia. It was in German, meaning it was das Baltikum. It was Estonia and Latvia. Lithuania was part of Polish influence. It did not belong to us. And they were also Catholics, and our Catholics, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the negative side of this influence was that Estonia was under foreign rule, and the foreign rulers were German-speaking, nobility and burghers in the towns, and especially when the national awakening began in the second half of 19th century of Estonians. So it was fiercely against Germans. It was then quite easy in certain way, because in the same time Russian Empire began to unify itself, and there was attempt to Russify the borderlands, all borderlands, not only Estonia and Latvia, but also this era, which are today Ukraine, Belarus, Lithuania, and others. And here, the enemies of Russian government, of central government, were Baltic Germans, because they were the rulers here. Mm-hmm. But of course, their privileges were protected by agreements or treaties made in 1710, when Estonia, Livonia, and bigger cities of this area capitulated to Russian Tsar Peter I. Then the agreement was signed, so-called capitulation. According to this, local classes had the right of own language, own fate, Lutheranism, Protestantism, and also local government, and their own law too, because this Baltic law is very little bit complicated, perhaps, to explain in for people who are coming from Anglo-American space. Mm-hmm. But the codified law here was written by Baltic Germans. It's included a lot of traditions. There were quotations to the Roman law. It's a so-called private law about how people are living together, marriages and ownership and so on and so on. And private law was valid also in the Republic of Estonia until 1930s. Mm-hmm. So we could say that we are living in remnants of a strong German influence here. On the other hand, what is about Russians, so there was Russian principalities were quite weak in 13th, 14th, 15th century because of attacks of Mongols, and actually they were occupied, subordinated to Mongols during 200 years. And there was no unity in Russia. There were different counties, duchies, principalities, they call it. But then, from the end of the 15th century, Russian Empire, Russian state, there was no empire, then began to consolidate around Moscow. And the princes of or grand princes of Moscow took power over Novgorod and Pskov, which were semi-independent principalities, or actually cities. And then step by step, Russia become stronger. And when the Ivan the Terrible become to Russian Tsar in, I think it was in the first half of 16th century, his foreign policy began to be more and more expansionist. Mm-hmm. But on the same time, also Sweden and Poland were big, had become big states with strong imperial wishes. And there was then a Livonian War from 1558 to 1583. And Estonia was then divided between Poland and Sweden, and Russians who governed southern part of Estonia, or actually southeast part area around Tartu. Mm-hmm. They were pushed away. Mm-hmm. And so it continued until the beginning of 18th century. In between, the lands were united under Swedish crown, because it was historically quite funny situation, because you know that in Poland, the king was elected by nobility. And there was a ruling dynasty with Lithuanian background, Jagailo or Jagellonians, And they died out. They had two last daughters. And Swedish King Johan III married to one of them, Katarzyna or Katarina. And they had children, and it happened so that when Johan died, so their son Sigismund was simultaneously king of Sweden and also of Poland, but Sweden was Lutheran, Poland was Catholic. And then the war began between Poland and Sweden. Swedish nobility began to mutiny against King Sigismund. And then it came to a war which was mostly fought on Baltic lands in Livonia and in Estonia also. And this war was almost 30 years. It doesn't mean that people were 30 years in the trenches, but in this time, wars were fought usually in summer or in winter. And then whole Estonia and northern Latvia or Livonia went to under Swedish crown. So we were under Swedish crown until 1710. And then Russian came, but as I said, there was Russian, Estonia was a part of Russian Empire, but local government, language, culture, fate, law, it was local German. And the Russian influence grew at the end of 19th century, step by step, because some Estonian young politicians saw Russian Empire as the ally against Baltic Germans here. But anyway, it was not so important, and also the Russification was a big shock also for Estonians, because until 1890s we had Estonian schools, Estonian primary schools, okay. Mm-hmm. But then also schools were Russified, and since 1917-1918 people who went to school, they all were fluent in Russian.
Right.
So it was, this part was of Russian influence. So it was a mixture of German and Russian. But when thinking back, also Russia itself had a stronger German influence, because Peter the First, as well as his descendants, had imported a lot of ideas and also administration, army, military. Very much of this was imported from German. So it is not quite easy to explain
right.
what we were and are. But going back to the very far history, in Estonian national consciousness, it is that we have lived here as Estonians 5,000 years, or before British, Germans, and others came to Europe, we were already here, like Celts in Great Britain.
Right.
But actually, newest research has shown that things are not so good. But anyway, 3,000 years more or less, okay. So Estonians are one of the oldest, we could say, not nations, but peoples in the Europe. Of course, oldest in the sense of language, mm-hmm. Language connected to the land, because anthropologically we are quite mixed, of course, during
right.
this yes. 3,000 years. Looking to us, we have not like our language relatives from Siberia or from Volga areas where the other Finno-Ugric peoples are living.
Okay. Thank you for that. In the 1930s, Estonia underwent campaigns to emphasize its national identity. Can you discuss the significance of these campaigns and how they shaped Estonian culture?
Perhaps not the culture, but the certain nationalist trends, which in modern time usually seen as treated as negative. But the nationalist trends were quite big in eastern part of Europe, and especially the new countries which were emerged after the collapse of empires in First World War. I mean, Russia, Austria-Hungary, but also Ottoman Empire, and in the party, even Germany. And though there was the need to create certain national identity also for the people of the new countries, most of them were initially very democratic countries, but soon after, the democracy did not work for many new states. And we know that democracy needs certain experience, certain level of civilization. Of course, also the democratic world has a lot of experiences how the attempts were to export democracy in some other areas in Asia or Africa. Mm-hmm. They were not always very successful. But for Estonians, I think many things were helpful. One thing was that, as you know, the serfdom was abolished in Imperial Russia in 1861. And there was actually no land property for peasants until the beginning of 20th century. And only then it was begun to introduce, and it was never finished because of Bolshevist revolution, Bolshevist takeover, we would say.
Right.
Here it was different because Baltic German nobility and also Baltic German intellectuals began the removing of the serfdom step by step from the beginning of the 19th century. And serfdom was removed in Estonia, meaning the Baltic. Estonia was the northern part of Estonia, today's Estonia. And Livonia was the northern Latvia and southern Estonia. So in this time, Estonia, serfdom was abolished in 1816 and in Livonia, 1819. And then in the middle of the 19th century, the small land ownership was introduced. Initially, there was only big land ownership, and the peasants were tenants.
Mm-hmm.
But then, from the middle of the 19th century, small land ownership for peasants was introduced, and also local government of peasant class. So we had, you know, vald in Estonia. Parish. It is very hard to translate because even in German it is the same word, Gemeinde. Gemeinde is people of one church, but Gemeinde is also an area, a local government.
Okay.
It's the same in Estonia. We translating it parish or rural municipality, but it's vald. But vald was only for peasant class. So it was self-government. They decided themselves what they are doing under supervision of initially nobility and later of state authorities. And there was this experience was, thanks to Lutheran Church, we had also literacy about 90% at the end of 19th century. Literacy, it means that principally everybody can read,
right,
not write. But of course, the primary school, 2 or 3 years, was mandatory, more or less, and therefore the general level of education was quite high. But nothing is simple in history, because when we're comparing Estonian and Armenians, mm-hmm. So in Estonia there was about 90% of population with primary education in 1897, Russian first general census. So percentage of literacy in Armenia was very much lower, but the percentage of people with secondary education and higher education among Armenians was much bigger. So we could see that Estonians were, like also Latvians were, peasant people, quite not unique, how you would say it, very everybody was like others.
Okay.
All were peasants. There were, of course, in the beginning of 20th century, also rich Estonians. Somebody lived in the towns. The lower classes in towns, cities were also Estonians, and a lot of them were already rich. But anyway, general level was a smallholder peasant. And in addition, one thing more, there was that that when the Republic of Estonia began, we had land reform in 1919. The big land ownership was abolished at all in Estonia.
Right.
And lands were sold or divided between peasants. But they were big, they were not big lands. There were about 40 hectares. It sounds very big in terms of Southern Europe, but taking into account our lands and our climate,
it is not as fertile. Yeah.
Yes, it is not so fertile. Yes. So therefore, it was good. And of course, this land reform had made Estonians to peasants.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no need to go to the towns, because everybody got the land and they wanted to be peasants, at least many of them wanted. And about in 1915, there was altogether 1,000 about Estonians with university education together with students, university students. So the general population was about 1 million. So then it gave sort of idea about how small numbers we're speaking here.
Right.
And therefore, when the Estonian democracy was not successful because of a lot of parties, very parliamentarian constitution, it means that Estonia had no head of state. Estonia had only prime minister, who was, when it was needed, in the duties of head of state.
Mm-hmm.
And there were 100 seats in the parliament. Now we have 101, mm-hmm. And a lot of parties, though there was very many governments changed each other during a short time. And then the Great Depression began in 1929, 1930. So the people was not satisfied with political situation, and people said that this parties and parliament is guilty of it. And then there was a turn to authoritarian system in 1934.
Right.
And then the idea of authoritarian rulers of Estonia, then there were three of them. There was President Päts, commander-in-chief of the armed forces, General Johan Laidoner, and then also not so much known Minister of Interior, Karel Enpalu. Mm-hmm. So Päts said in his speeches that people is sick and we need more unity, and what should be the ground for this unity? The ground for this unity should be Estonianness. So it began very directed policy of strengthening of Estonianness. And national war, national flags were distributed. Also, Estonian names were introduced. Estonians got their surnames or family names mostly in 1830s. They were given by manor holders or priests, and many of them were German-like. So in 1930s, about 100,000 surnames were Estonized, so Estonized. And there was a year of Estonian book, because the first book in Estonian was printed in 1535, so the year 1935 was the year of Estonian book, for 400th anniversary of Estonian book.
Okay.
Of course, later it was found that the first book was printed in 1525, but it was already later. where we have celebrated the year of Estonian book also later in Soviet time, and perhaps it will come now too in 2025. Estonian mothers were supported, those mothers who had a lot of children, and also there were certain legal initiatives to support Estonianness in society. For example, a lot of Estonians sent their children to German schools by different reasons, or to Russian schools also, because the education was Russian language until 1918 and secondary education. But also German speaking schools were treated as a little bit better schools. It was changed. There was a law taken that everybody has nationality. Everybody should choose, or parents should choose, is their child Estonian, Russian, or something else. And every child should study in national language, his or her national language. It was quite normal policy, actually.
Right.
And it was quite, not everybody liked it, because some people wanted their children to study in German schools. And there were also a lot of mixed marriages, because in turbulent years of First World War and Revolution, here were a lot of Russian, all soldiers from Russia. There were, and I have seen from in the files, there were student fraternities and sororities at the University of Tartu. And there was one also of Russian young ladies, and their biographies had survived. And several years ago, I wanted to establish who were the members. And then a lot of them were like mother Estonian, father Polish, child Russian. So it happens. Well, it happens also today now, because of the certain globalization that took place all of them. And the globalization is taking place always in big empires. But usually empires had not enough time to unify everything, right, because they are collapsing earlier.
Thank you. How did Estonia maintain its national consciousness during the Soviet era? And what role did it play in the eventual restoration of Estonian statehood in the 1980s?
We should, for a while, to went back to 1920s, because different to even Latvia or Lithuania or other East European countries, Estonia was quite mono-ethnic. About 90% of our population were Estonians, ethnic Estonians. We had national minorities, about 4,000 Jews and 7,000 Swedes, and also about 8 to 9% of Russians who lived in border areas in east and in southeast. But in general, Estonian and Germans were only a very teeny minority, about 14 to 16,000 in general. So it was quite easy to be Estonian in Estonia, even in the Soviet time in the beginning. Another factor was that Estonians, as I said, were peasants, clerks, intellectuals, teachers, academics, but there were and is not very much Estonian factory workers or who like to work in big industrial plants. And as you know, the idea of Sovietization or creating a communist society, it is standing on three whales: industrialization, collectivization of agriculture, and cultural revolution. So with agriculture and agriculture and cultural revolution, there were also some problems, but the big problem was industrialization, because There were no industrial workers, enough industrial workers for the plants which were planned by the Soviet government to build up in Estonia, especially in oil shale mining and producing of electricity in northeast part of Estonia and also others. And therefore, a lot of people from Soviet Union came to Estonia after beginning with 1950s, actually. And for Estonians, it was not very happy situation, of course, because they were different. They were even not Russians, they were Soviets. It means that they had a big part of them had no roots, because collectivization and industrialization took place also in Soviet Union in 1920s, 1930s. A lot of people went from the villages to the cities, to big cities, to industries. They were simple workers. And they were, in this sense, rootless, that when there were some opportunities here in Estonia, so they came simply here. They had perhaps they even know them, that they are, their ancestors are coming from this and this village. But then they came here, and for Estonians, it is therefore also perhaps good situation because of preserving our identity, because they were simple workers mostly.
Right.
And they were Soviets. So the Russian, a number of Russian intellectuals was not very big among the people who were taken to Estonia. Although a big part of Russian-speaking people came to Estonia together with Soviet army. The Soviet army, Estonia was very important for militarily for Soviet Union in the 1940s, 1950s. This was the era of big ships, and Tallinn was like a forepost of Soviet Baltic fleet.
Mm-hmm.
But then the missile era began in 1955 and 1950s, and also after Stalin's death, we could say, and also Soviet Union made agreement with Germany in 1955. It means that Kaliningrad area was more or less settled, that it will remain
by
the Soviets.
I wasn't aware of that, but
it was taken, of course, in 45, 46 already.
Mm-hmm.
But in 55, so-called Adenauer agreements with Nikita Khrushchev,
mm-hmm.
so it was more or less settled.
Okay.
And then the forepost of Baltic fleet was not in Tallinn, but in Kaliningrad. And therefore, the pressure of military troops was a little bit not so strong anymore here in Estonia. But in Soviet Union, and I suppose also in many armies, there was a law that when an officer or a professional NCO is leaving his service due to the age or some other reason, mostly due to the age, he could choose the place of residence. So a lot of former Soviet officers remained in Estonia because the living standard here was better.
Right.
Life was also... So, you know, the Russians have always had, the Russian society has always had since 1500s already, a certain minority complex. Everything is somehow better, which is in Europe or in, not to say about the United States. But on the other hand, they're always attacking it. It is like somehow schizophrenic situation in their minds. They like American cars, but they're saying that America is bad. They like German industrial products, but they're saying Germany is enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And so in Soviet time, Estonia for them was somehow a part of so-called Soviet West. Estonia was West, also Latvia, Lithuania. And And somehow there was a reflection also to Estonian self-perception. We began to thought perhaps ourselves a little bit more best, like we as we in, are in the reality. Mm-hmm. We think that we thought, and somehow we are thinking also that we are a little bit better than those people who came from the Soviet Union after the Second World War.
Sure.
It was also one strong element of supporting our identity. And then the next Russification began in at the end of 1970s and the beginning of 80s. So Estonians began to, there was certain civic opposition. When there was a general Soviet census in 1979, you know that in Soviet Union, the statistics were held also by ethnicity. Everybody has in his or her passport the ethnicity written.
Okay.
So statistics were held by the ethnicity, and when in 1979 a question was during this census about skills of Russian language, so the skills of Russian language had went down to comparing with census of 1969. So Estonians simply said that we cannot speak. Actually, you know, many of them, of course, could, because we all had, not all, but men, there was compulsory military service in Soviet Union. Right. Every man had to serve in Soviet Army, and during this two or earlier, even 3 years, even very stupid human being could obtain Russian, some skills of Russian language. Right. So, what to say about it? And sometimes it is not so anymore. We are already fast 20 years in European Union and NATO, but initially Estonians were very, felt themselves very bad when somebody said about former Soviet Republic.
Right.
Because we have always thought that we are not former Soviet Republic. We were occupied. Estonia was a member of League of Nations in interwar period, like other European and American states were. And it is also a difference between, for example, Central Asia, because the statehood of Kazakhs and Turkmens and Uzbeks, Tajiks, Kyrgyz actually was created during Soviet era in 1920s, 1930s.
Mm-hmm.
And for them, there is also the Russian influence, like it was here in 19th century and earlier the Baltic German influence. So in Central Asia, as well as in Northern Caucasus, perhaps, the Russian Empire was something which took civilization to their areas. So the position of Russians and of being the part of Russian or Soviet system was of different importance. For example, in Soviet Army, Estonians did not like to serve in Soviet Army, and there were not very many ethnic Estonian officers in the Soviet Army. But it was differently in Central Asia or even Caucasus. Of course, I said also that Estonians were peasants, but in Caucasus and also Central Asia, there is a long tradition of their own nobility, and historically also military service, officer service is a task and duty of nobility. So, and therefore, Central Asian young boys very much liked to serve in Soviet Army. Estonians did not. Somehow wanted to distance ourselves from this Soviet system in general.
Right.
And even when there were, Soviet Union was centralized empire. So if we are speaking about Estonian Communist Party during Soviet time, it was actually the branch in Estonia of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union.
Okay.
But there are quite cool statistics also about this branch. And there were in 1989, before the collapse, there were 112,000 members in this Estonian branch of the Communist Party. And of this 112,000, about half were ethnic Estonians. As okay. I told, ethnic the statistics were held by ethnicity.
Mm-hmm.
There was, of course, another problem too, because by the definition, Communist Party is Workers' Party. As I said, Estonians mm-hmm. didn't like to be industrial workers. So,
right.
And when I was student in the 1980s, I returned from the Soviet Army in 86 after 2 years. And then also some party members came to us and said that you should join to the party because university students are in the statistics like workers. It is easy now to join the party when you are a student. And it's very important to join the party because the Communist Party needs Estonians.
Mm-hmm.
We said, no, it's not a good idea. In 1986, Gorbachev was in power. It was seen that everything is a little bit going down. And one thing here is important more because I have had a lot of conversation with my older countrymates, of course. Mm-hmm. And for example, an old doctor, he was born in 1923. He had to serve in the German army during World War II for continuing his studies because to join the university, it was needed a certificate that you had fought at least 6 months against Bolshevism. That was such system. So he joined some air reconnaissance unit, which was situated on island Naissaar, I think, or somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then spent there 6 months and then joined the university, immatriculated to the university. And he had success. It was he has no problem with this because he was not officer, and also the papers of this air reconnaissance unit went lost in somewhere in Königsberg, now Kaliningrad.
Oh, okay.
And he was never established. He was in German army, at least.
Fortunately,
And then he said to me that in at the end of 1950s or even in the beginning of 1960s, he began only to understand that Soviets had come to stay here. So before that, there was very strong hope that it is temporary.
Right.
It's actually, they had right, of course, because it was temporary, but the temporariness of different length.
Yeah, right.
Yes. And also, when I looked my old papers at home, some years ago, I found that when I was a schoolboy, every parents are keeping, preserving the drawings of children somewhere.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I do, and I saw when I was seven year old, my ship's hydro had blue, black, white flags.
They did, oh.
Yes, but the flag was prohibited then, actually,
mm-hmm.
officially and publicly. So we always knew that many Estonians knew. There were also, of course, communists, and there were people who were simply afraid because of Soviet terror and other things.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, in 1970s, when my childhood was, it was not so strong anymore. And so Estonians always hoped that it will be over in some moment.
Right. Thank you. On August 23rd, 2018, the unveiling of a monument dedicated to Estonia's victims of communism. Could you explain the significance of this monument and its roles in Estonian commemoration efforts?
I could say that I am a hardcore archive historian. And therefore, the big advance of so-called memory sciences is something what I, in all these elements, do not like very much. Okay. Of course, there are some good trends, but not everything. And the memorial was erected by the initiative of our victim societies. We had most of the people are dead already because time is doing its job.
Right.
But already at the end of Soviet time, when in 1988 or 89, the first victim society Memento was founded of people who were deported and returned to Estonia, who were deported in 41 and 49 and returned to Estonia and their children. Already then there was an idea that Estonia needs a common memorial for all victims. Well, there were, initially there was a plan to erect it in the Freedom Square.
Okay.
And then there were other ideas, you know, but such things are taking always time in Estonia, and not only in Estonia. Finally, then in 2000, when the elections were, I think 2015 or somehow some like that, was decided that this memorial will be erected there, where it is, in Maarja Mäe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Maarja Mäe. There is Maarja Mõisa in Tartu. I'm always confusing them. And there was also a long discussion about how it should be like and who we commemorating with this memorial. And the Estonian memory is personal. It means that every victim should have a name.
Mm-hmm.
We do not commemorate only million or 3 millions or 10 millions because or 100 millions of victims of the communists, nobody knows.
Right.
What means 100 million? Nothing. It's only a big figure. So Estonia is a small nation. We had the opportunity to commemorate every victim personally. And also it is due to the fact that Soviet state security authorities had quite a good bookkeeping. And in the beginning of 1990s, the files of people who were oppressed and who were born or lived in Estonia, the files of those people were taken back to Estonia from some Soviet archive. It was an agreement of, I think, Minister of Interior of Yeltsin government in Russia and then Estonian government or even transformation government in 1990 or 1991. And therefore, the people from this victim society Memento immediately began to work with this data to compile lists, and now they are available on internet. And therefore, actually, we have the base. But now the other thing here is that Estonians like to commemorate their loved ones on their parish cemeteries.
Right.
Yes, there is my mother, there is my grandmother, there is my great-great-grandmother, they all are there.
Yeah, so and we do when we go.
Yes, I'm going there during Christmas, not very often, of course, because life is more important than death. But we are keeping the graves in order and it's okay. It's our tradition.
Nice tradition.
Yes, and it is a little bit perhaps different than in the United States because we are not moving very much. We are living by generation one of the same place and Estonia is small.
Correct.
Even different. When you are living in Tartu, you could go to the once in a year to a cemetery in Saaremaa, for example. It's right. Not a big thing.
No.
So, and then there were big debates, and then initially it was decided that the names on this memorial are the names of those people, generally speaking, who has no grave in Estonia. So people who were perished in Siberia and Gulag in deportation, or executed in Estonia and buried unknown where, and so on. So it is a general principle because it is devil is in details, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have 23,000 and more fates, there is always some things that doesn't fit very well in general picture. So we should have this site in some moments, and we are trying to do right decision, of course. This task belonged to Estonian Institute of Historical Memory. We are recently and every day keeping register of our victims and preparing mistakes and so on, because there are big numbers, even small to compare to other nations.
Okay. Thank you. The Estonian Parliament issued statements condemning crimes committed during occupation and annexations. Could you provide more insight into these statements and their impact on Estonia's historical narrative?
Oh, yes. It began already in 1990s, the debates. And I think the first more important declaration was taken in 2002. But there was a thing of double occupation. Estonia was not only occupied by the Soviets, but also by the Germans. And the Estonians did not participate in the Second World War as a country, as a nation, as a state. But Estonians as persons fought in the Second World War. There were about up to 100,000 Estonian men and some women also who were in one or another side. But the general picture of Second World War was black and white. There were reincarnation of Devil, Nazi Germany, and then allies who won Nazi Germany together with Soviet Union. And especially in the 90s, it was very hard to explain to the people in Europe and America that for Estonians, the situation was not so black and white, because about up to 70,000 Estonians were members of different Estonian national units of German armed forces, and so fought together with Nazis against Soviet Union. About 30 and more thousand Estonians who were mobilized from Estonia in 1941 were members of Red Army. There was an Estonian National Rifle Corps, about 30,000 men or so. And therefore, when Soviets returned to Estonia in 1944 in September, it was for us not a liberation.
Okay.
And on the other hand, in this time, in the beginning of the 90s, you know, army needs young men. Mm-hmm. So people who were mobilized to the German army or joined voluntarily, they were born in, say, 1919 to 1926. When somebody has born in 1926, he was in 1991, 65 years old. So in our world, quite young. And of course, they were quite a strong influence group. And also Estonian government itself did not like to say that in sake of joining in accelerated way to Western community, to say that everything what is made by Estonians who were in German service were bad, and the only good soldiers were the ones who were in Finnish army or then in the Red Army.
Right.
And therefore, there was such debates behind this declaration. Mm-hmm. Always when the Soviet crimes were condemned, also the Nazi crimes were condemned, because of our double occupation. Also, Nazi crimes were committed on Estonian soils and against Estonians, and in a part also by Estonians, as well as Soviet crimes were committed here and in a small part also by Estonians, because the staff of the Soviet State Security Service, trustworthiness is very important, and there were not a lot of Estonians. But on the other hand, after the First World War, a lot of ethnic Estonians stayed in Soviet Russia. Okay. And by different reasons. Mm-hmm. There was quite a big emigration from beginning with the end of 19th century because there was often land in Siberia, so also in Caucasus, Northern Caucasus, and other places. And during First World Wars, a lot of people were in the army, and somehow they stayed there. In 1920, peace agreement was signed between Estonia and Soviet Russia, and in principle, there was also the same change of population. So Estonians from Russia to Estonia, and so Russian subjects from Estonia to Russia. But Bolsheviks did not like especially people leaving. So there were, it was hinted that, and therefore a lot of Estonians remained there. They went through this Sovietization in Russia in 1920s, 1930s. And in 1940s, they were used as pool of human pool for Sovietization here. So therefore, there were also a lot of ethnic Estonians in Soviet side. But on the other hand, some nations are keeping the register by ethnicity. When we're speaking about, for example, Polish history, there were Polish operations. In Polish operations of Soviet state security against Poles, in 1930, so by ethnicity. Estonians looking on citizenship. So people, we cannot treat people who were born in Soviet Union and grown up in Soviet Union like traitors.
Right.
In the Republic of Estonia, because they were not Estonian citizens.
Right.
There is a difference. Of course, nothing is black and white in the history, but it is a general view in this topic. And therefore, as you were, when you're reading those statements, they are also available in English and in internet. You can find them. So that always Estonia is very carefully stating both totalitarian regimes in the parliamentarian statements.
Thank you. The removal and relocation of the Bronze Soldier War Memorial in Tallinn stirred significant controversy. How did this event impact Estonian society and public discourse on historical memory?
Yes, it was quite symbol in this course because of the when we reading modern news, today's newspapers, so it was one of the first cyber attacks considered this in 2007. But the Bronze Soldier was there since 1946 or somehow. It was a general rule in the Soviet Union when the commemoration of victims or soldiers, heroes of Great Fatherland War. It was the name of the Second World War in Soviet use. The commemoration of heroes was made important, and every capital city of Union Republic should have a central place, sort of memorial.
Mm-hmm.
It was also in Latvia, you know, when last summer it was removed. Then Tallinn one was built up in 46, as I said, or a little bit later. And in when Estonia became independent again in the beginning of 90s, there were discussions about we should remove it. But then there was more important things to do, and it was simply forgotten. But when Vladimir Putin came to power in 2000, so the Great Fatherland War was made one of the fundamental things of modern Russian identity. And then my office was there, very close there, and then I remember that every 9th of May and 22nd of September, 22nd of September was Soviet Day celebration of liberation of Tallinn in 1944. So every 9th of May and 22nd of September, more and more people were gathering around this Bronze Soldier. And also Soviet songs were sung, and Soviet flags and Red Army uniforms, and also primary school children were taken to those events, and there were a sea of flowers around this monument. And the Estonians, as you know, are quite peaceful people, and initially was simply let them do.
Mm-hmm.
But more and more it was used like a symbol of strength, strengthening of identity of Russian-speaking population in Estonia, and strengthening of their Russian identity connected to modern Russia, not identity somehow Russian identity in Estonia.
Right.
And then simply in 2006, it became a topic in Estonian internal politics, of course. And when there were elections, 2007, I think there was the elections were before that. And this time, current Prime Minister Andrus Ansip simply promised that we will remove it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was done in April 2007. Then there were riots organized in Tallinn. It was nothing exceptional to comparing, for example, Paris or Berlin.
Right.
Always happening in Tallinn.
Right.
But it is not a habit in Estonia, actually.
Sure.
And we were quite worried then. But our security, internal security police and police were quite on their level, and it was peaced in a very short time. And what we saw after that there are always some people who like more progressive or more European than Europe itself. It's also sort of sign of complex of minority. And they said that we Estonians are very much hurting the rights of Russian minority, and it is very bad what happened, and so on and so on. And there was quite big debate, because intellectuals usually have time to debate, and and when the internet is available for everybody, so there was debate in Estonian public.
Right.
It went down, of course, after 2014, and especially after the Russian aggression against Ukraine in 2022. And then the same people are sometimes saying to their colleagues from other countries that we have said it already, that Russians are bad, but they don't remember what they said in 2007 when they said that we are violating the rights of Russian minority, removing their monument from there. But now also the monuments of war graves were removed, and the remnants of the people, of soldiers who were buried under the war memorial, they were buried to military cemetery, different military cemeteries actually. And what has been established, it is also the difference between big nations and religious nations and nations like Estonians who are not so religious. And because when the graves were opened under the Soviet Red Army military monuments, not always the remnants under the monument were the remnants of those people whose names were on the monument.
Okay.
So for religious nations, relics are very important.
Right.
So we should believe, and we are believing, what modern Russia is believing. It is a little bit different, of course, but anyway, they should believe, and they are believing. Estonians are wanting to know.
Sure. It's a symbol.
Let's open it to looking what is inside, like it is in the, I don't know, have you seen it? It's an Estonian, very popular movie from the Soviet time, Last Relic, about fights in Livonian War, actually, in 16th century.
Mm.
Very funny. Every Estonian could say some words of this movie, because it has been for 50 years very popular. And in the last pictures in this movie, it is about the burning down of this monastery of Pirita.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
Yes, and there is a relic of the relic of this Saint Bridget, which was held in this monastery and around what the whole story is going about, it's a relic. Mm-hmm. And then some Estonians are looking on this and saying, nice box, interesting, what is it inside of it? It is a Estonian attitude somehow to relics. It is not the best, better than the attitude of believing nations, but it's simply different.
Right.
So for Russians, it's okay when under the stone is not the same guy whose name is on the stone. But for us, it is some deception.
Right. We have two more questions. Do you have time for them? Okay. Estonia's approach to honoring victims of totalitarianism regimes has been influenced by international pressure. Could you elaborate on how international perspectives have shaped Estonia's commemorative efforts?
Oh, yes. We could dedicate a special program to it because I have been a member of this Estonian Institute of Historical Memory, is founding member of Platform for European for European Memory and Conscience. Mm-hmm. It is founded according to European Parliament regulation from 2009, April, and it is taking together NGOs, but also state offices, who are researching or rising public awareness on totalitarian regimes. So it is quite big organization now, about fast 70 members, member organizations. Mm-hmm. And I have been active there 10 years already, more than 10 years, so I'm quite aware about how it is in different East European countries, but not only East European, but also in Germany and France, even in the United States and Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could say that there was no pressure. Or actually, when we are going back to negotiation for joining EU and NATO, mm-hmm. from the end of 1990 to the beginning of this century. So in the United States, the Holocaust, commemoration of Holocaust and Holocaust as such was important again since the end of 1990s. There was a Stockholm conference in 2000 organized by this time Swedish Prime Minister Göran Persson on commemoration of Holocaust, and the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance was founded. Although Estonians are participating in commemoration of victims of both dictatorships of totalitarian regimes. But then in the beginning of 2000s, also in American State Department, I suppose, or is still, there is a special office or special officials for Holocaust issues, mm-hmm. Holocaust commemoration issues. And when Estonia joined the NATO and EU, also the one topic of negotiation was the coming to terms with history. And Western Europe and the United States were not very much interested in our history together with Soviets. Western and Europe and the United States were interested in coming to terms with what happened during Nazi occupation, Estonian participation in the Second World War, and Estonian Waffen-SS division, and so on. And actually, it was one of the reasons because of the Estonian International Commission for the Investigation of Crimes Against Humanity was founded. It was the reason to make these things clear. And it was founded by, this time, Estonian President Lennart Meri, who is dead now. And he invited the commission members, committee members, only from abroad.
Oh, okay.
Because to guarantee the trustworthiness of this results. Sense.
Sure.
But of course, the research team was Estonian one. Then we were young, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there was young Estonian research team, and Estonian academic community was a little bit worried about it, why it is organized in such way. But Lennart Meri said simply that I need results quickly, and therefore it is only semi-academic work. Because, but we had the opportunity to go through archives in Estonia as well as in Germany or United States, Finland, Latvia, also in Russia then. And we could produce in quite short term sort of report. Actually, commission wrote their own reports based on the research, which was made by Estonian research team and translated into English.
Okay.
And the commission reports, there were three reports altogether. There was Soviet occupation 40-41, German occupation 41-44, and then Soviet occupation beginning with 1944. And we began with German occupation because this was the most important for having some material for those negotiations for EU and NATO. Because we should remember that at the end of 90s, the 9/11 was not happened yet.
Right.
And western part of the world wanted to have a sort of not good but a certain relationship with Russia, and they did not want, especially the East Europeans, to their company because of their nobody knew what past and what problems connected to it.
Right, right.
And therefore, we had to do our work quite carefully. But on the other hand, our work was research-based. So Estonian historical identity is and should be research-based. We should not tell stories.
Right.
And, you know, history is only composition of thousands and millions of stories, but behind of each story is also a history. So you cannot build your general historical identity only basing on some stories which sometimes are not even not true.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, right. And I think we succeeded to do it. And I have been in business, I could say so, 25 years, and I have seen how also the general view to history has changed, and my own views has changed during this time, because world is more open than 25 years ago. We have a lot of information. We know what our neighbors are speaking and writing, and we know that other people are speaking and writing, and we have a huge material of comparison. And it is important because it is very easy to be in your very small corner and speak only about your own things.
Right.
But it's dangerous too, because nobody knows you, and nobody will help you when you are in your own corner.
Right. Looking ahead, how do you think Estonia's politics of memory will continue to evolve? And what impact might this have on the country's national identity in the future?
You never know what will happen.
No.
But, but as we agreed earlier, empires will collapse in some moment. And there are certain imperial trends also in the European Union. We can't deny them. And therefore, if we are thinking about a more distant future, you know Estonian language, no sex, no future.
But right.
No gender, no future, okay. But anyway, we never know what is after 100 years. And therefore, when we are looking back to very distant history, there were the eras of globalization also earlier, in Roman Empire 2000 years ago, very big globalization, and then collapsed. And then everybody began anew. Of course, every empire has left its impact to the future. And therefore, it's like something is an Estonian national or national identity is something to what we could always support ourselves. So it is something. It is always developing, of course. My children and I have already grandchildren too. My grandchildren will not speak about it like I'm speaking now. But anyway, some core is remaining there. And children and grandchildren are traveling around and meeting other people, and then it's the decision, will they remain somewhere there and come back? And you know, I like living here. And for living here, you should have certain, I think, certain identity which connects you with this place. It is not only land, it is not only your life and language, but also the history.
Mm-hmm.
Something, you know, Benedict Anderson and the imagined communities and so on and so on, but somehow it is not only imagined, it is something real existing inside of it.
Nice. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate you doing this interview with me.
Thank you.
Okay.
Meie põleme, meie sureme, siis ei jää enam ühtegi orja, ei ühtegi orja, ühtegi orja, ei ühtegi, ühtegi peremeest. Ei ühtegi orja, ühtegi orja, ei ühtegi, ühtegi peremeest.
The music you just heard is from the movie Vimne Reliquia by Peter Toma. The song is called Masayatelaul, or Rebel Song. So until next time, this is William Parsley, Nagamist.